distortions in quantum gravity. So we have here a distinguished panel of five researchers who have been thinking about these issues for a long time, and we'll try to extract some words of wisdom from them. They all gave already some their talks, so we thought that it's not necessary to make some introductory remarks. We will go directly to some set of questions. So I prepared a set of questions for them. And the questions are collected into five themes. So I will have five slides. Each slide will be about a theme, and we will discuss that theme first with the panel, and then with the whole audience. And when the discussion is more or less exhausted, or when the time is over, we go to the next theme. So that's how it will work. So let me introduce the first slide will be not about the future, but rather about the state of the art. So now I will start with what I would call the existential question. Is there a quantum gravity or is there not? And I would say that the effective field theory that John introduced in the first talk of this workshop, by any reasonable definition of the words, is a quantum theory of gravity. It is not the unique theory of gravity, but certainly it is one. And so, yet, we very often open a preprint and we read that in spite of many efforts, we do not yet have a quantum theory of gravity. That's I admit that I probably have written a dozen papers starting that way in the past, but I don't do that anymore. So now the first question for the panelists will be, what do you make of this statement? Namely, if we already have a quantum theory of gravity, what is it that we are still looking for? What is it that we are still missing after many efforts? That will be the first question. And then I will ask, what is the most striking prediction that has been made by the particular version of quantum gravity that you work with? And more generally, what you think is the most striking prediction of any version of quantum gravity of all those that have been discussed here? So we start from the left, let's say, from the far end. Mary?
So, okay, you know, I knew that it's a mistake to come here, and I was just sitting there. But the chair changed and put me here, so it's always bad to be at the beginning or the end. At the end, because you repeat yourself, at the beginning, because you don't know what to say. So having said that, yes, I think that we should go beyond an effective field theory. For me, an effective field theory should be, some kind of low energy limit of some limit of some kind of fundamental theory. And for that way, I think that we should go beyond an effective field theory. Now, if you are asking why we do not have a quantum theory of gravity, I think because it's a very difficult task, and because I don't think that it's very simple to just wake up a day and have the theory of quantum gravity. In that way, I think that it's very useful to have the interplay between the foundations of possible proposal for quantum gravity and the predictions, and then the predictions might go back and give some kind of, recommendations of how you could build your model. But beyond all that, there is another question that somehow puzzles me often is whether we do have the appropriate mathematical tools in order to build a theory of quantum gravity. So we know that often, you know, some kind of mathematics like calculus has been developed in order to help physics. There are things in mathematics that were done independently of physical kind of implications. But now I start to wonder whether we do have the appropriate tools in mathematics, or whether mathematicians have, but we don't know them, in order indeed to do a theory of quantum gravity.
We will come back to the tools eventually.
So that's my first. So we've seen, for instance, the other day when Renata gave her talk that you said about some developments which you are using that have been used a lot in the world of mathematics. But certainly, I believe that we should go beyond. I mean, for instance, differential geometry, things like that. So there is some lacking of tools there which probably we don't know. But that's my, I mean, 2 cents in the, okay. in the question.
Then Renata.
Okay, so let me just take the cue from whatever I can just barely read on the screen. EFT of gravitons. Again, I would say, yeah, it's a candidate theory of quantum gravity, but with the limitations that everyone has said, you know, until what scale is it valid? Is it supposed to be valid? And also, I have always a question, is it even in principle verifiable? You know, as a candidate theory. But let me move on to the next thing. So yeah, this agonizing statement,
What is the question? Whether EFT is verifiable?
No. Yeah, whether EFT, indeed. Even if it's just low energy, is it verifiable? So that is a side comment on the question, on the statement. It's not a question there, so I'm not sure what we should do with it anyway. So, but then coming to this next, as you said, I would say it's also the opening, you know, of the PhD thesis where on page one the person summarizes the state of the art. So in the old days, the first sentence was always, there are two main approaches to quantum gravity, bar and bar. Now, this statement, I would say, it is progress in the sense that it leaves space for other things. But what I don't like about it, it can be read as hiding complexities and hiding, you know, that we are unable to make progress. So I'm commenting specifically on this statement, but of course it says something about the state of the art of our field, right? It's a kind of defeatist statement. At least you can read it like this. So it's not, you know, would you like to work on a subject where everyone has as a first sentence, we have worked for very, very long on this, and we still have no idea what it is about? I wouldn't be very excited about it. So I think we may need a change of perspective of rephrasing ourselves, you know, maybe recalibrating our aims and maybe also what we want to go for. But maybe this is part of a later discussion, paradigm perspective, or is it not?
Well, my question would be, what do you want in addition to what the effective field theory can already give you?
Well, obviously, and the non-perturbative, you know, that there is something that exists. Yeah. I mean, this is, of course, the elephant in the room, right?
Okay.
So you're saying beautiful things about all these, you know, low energy, you know, what we can say and effective prescription, but is there something rather than nothing that exists, you know, at high energies?
Okay.
So I take something which I think I've seen in a statement by Renata in her lectures on quantum gravity, and that was quantum gravity should be a theory over all scales. So I guess that by definition, then EFT is for low energy scales, which we should keep in mind. So
why in particular gravity? I mean, also the other interactions work at all scales, presumably.
Yeah, no, this is for sure our hope, because it comes from this idea of unification, and once you have quantum gravity, we can understand the world on all scales. As you point out, this might be wrong. There might be, you know, something even deeper, which we don't understand. But quantum gravity on all scales, I guess, it comes because, indeed, we have the cosmos, which we know is described by gravity. And there's Planck scale, which, you know, has G in it, and is the Big Bang of the universe. So for sure, gravity plays a role on this enormous range of scales, which does not appear to be so important for the other interactions. So you might want to have that, but again, I think it's also important to keep in mind that you can start both from the non-perturbative world and the perturbative world, and it's important to build connections. And that's what I hope to see in the future, being this future panel. to connect these different approaches.
Kaja, please.
Yeah, I think the answer depends on what you mean by theory and what you mean by quantum. One could be very happy with having this effective description or perturbative description of physics. I mean, one calculates and one knows what to calculate. So I think in this sense, quantum field theory as such is not really a theory because we have the perturbative understanding, but we don't have a complete non-perturbative description. And personally, I would always go for the non-perturbative description. So in this sense, I think we are not there yet with quantum field theory, and we are not there yet with quantum theory of gravity. And the other sort of caveat maybe to answer this question is what does it mean quantum? So, I could accept that, well, there is a description of quantum gravity as something like quantum field theory, let's say asymptotic safety or EFT, where you do things the traditional way as a sort of continuum theory. But there is, I think, more subtle question, is this all there is? And is it really true for all scales? Over time, sort of questions we are asking in this field changed. And, many people actually do want to understand, is there something like a quantum nature of space-time itself? And kind of connect the question of, quantizing space-time or understanding, the sort of small structure of space-time as part of the quantum gravity question. But I can see a scenario where these are kind of decoupled, that there is some sort of theory of say, gravitational field as a QFT-like entity. But still, if you zoom in farther, if you go deeper, you find that there is some discrete structure. So I think that these are my thoughts on the question.
Thanks. Oruz?
Okay, and I guess to some extent, I'm not sure I've got much new to add, but I think I would say I agree with the statement. However, it's unnecessarily negative in the sense of it sounds very defeatist. I think it's really quite a testament to our ingenuity.
Do you agree?
Well, let me finish. it is a testament, if you like, to our inventiveness that we can come up with all these different ideas, and many people think we do have a theory of quantum gravity. For me, what I would like to see from the gravitational side, I want to know what happens as we go to very small scales. So just like Kasia was saying, do we have discreteness? What exactly happens? And on the quantum side, what always strikes me is the two very different answers I get if I ask about the measurement problem. If you ask high energy people, they feel it's been solved. If I speak to people actually doing quantum physics day in, day out, in experiment, they feel that this is still very much a live problem. So what does it really mean to have a quantum state? And, what are we experiencing in our everyday sort of perception of the world, which appears classical unless we really focus down. Is that answered?
Okay. So can we summarize this by saying that perhaps, the effective field theory, as we heard, is a theory of gravitons moving in flat space. It's certainly very different from what we know about gravity classically is a theory of geometry. It differs from what Einstein, what we learned from Einstein. So perhaps what we want now is a quantum theory of space-time. Can we agree on this statement?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, very good. There's some agreement among all panelists, and with that we go on to the next. Anybody wants to add something or ask some more about this topic? Max?
Even if we had the theory of quantum gravity, it doesn't mean that we understand it. Just look at quantum mechanics. We are still debating about foundations after more than one century. This is just a comment.
Okay, so we move to, oops, sorry, this is, how do I go, like that. So now we have a slide about conceptual foundations of a quantum theory of space-time, possibly. And so the first question is, does this require a paradigm shift, whatever that means? I'm not sure.
You should.
But we have some rough idea. And perhaps just to give you some rough idea what that could mean, that could be the distinction between the quantum field theory approaches, which work within a rather well-established paradigm, perhaps pushing it a little further, but not too much, and completely different things like discrete models or theories in high dimensions, strings, and so on. So at least that would be a rough possible classification. And then, now, there's been paradigm shifts in physics in the last century, special relativity, general relativity, quantum mechanics. Each one of them involved a deep rethinking about nature. And there is this very nice quote from Heisenberg, and he said the following, reminiscing about his youth and when he discovered matrix theory and so on. He said that the most difficult part in the development of a new theory is abandoning some of the most important old concepts. Any good physicist would be willing to acquire new concepts, but even the best physicists are sometimes quite unwilling to leave some of the old and apparently safe concepts. This was in a talk that Heisenberg gave at ISTP in the 60s sometimes. So the question then for the panelists would be, if there has to be a paradigm shift, what do you think, what concepts do you think we should abandon? Would it require us to go into some uncharted territory where we abandon some of the established notions? And then, this is related perhaps to what you already mentioned, would a quantum theory of space-time require also modifications of quantum theory itself? So, once again, we start from...
from the other side now.
Okay.
Okay. So, I guess, first of all, I really like that quote of Heisenberg. Mm-hmm. I think it's absolutely spot on. I guess my own sort of perspective is that I suspect that, yes, it does require a paradigm shift. And I think... one of the things coming from a more relativity side that's always frustrated me is I've always felt that field theorists have always tried to shoehorn gravity into quantum theory. And so without necessarily being willing to abandon some of the aspects of modifying quantum theory. So I'm happy to see that up there. Not that I have any good ideas, but for example, with the causal set theory, the thing, you know, what struck me about that was that, in a sense, this was about developing a very different way of thinking about something and thinking about kinematics. To me, it was never about making a path integral finite. Why should we care? I mean, maybe the path integral isn't necessary ultimately. Not that I've, again, got any good idea in terms of what to substitute for it. But so I think we should be willing to abandon everything, both concepts of continuum differential geometry and quantum theory. But there you go.
Okay, so it's very hard to continue from that because Ruth already abandoned everything, so there is nothing left for me to abandon. I think I agree with the general sentiment because, I mean, if we are talking about paradigm shift, then let's try to have an unbiased look at the problem and start from scratch. But of course, it's hard for us to do so. So typically we abandon one concept at a time. or different approaches focus on abandoning different concepts. So I think one concept that I would say probably has to go when talking about quantum spacetime, or, you know, quantum structure of spacetime, would be locality. So it should probably be either abandoned or at least very significantly weakened. Now, this modification of quantum theory, that also sounds very attractive. So as a mathematical physicist, I come from algebraic approach to quantum theory, which is slightly more operator algebra focused and less Hilbert space focused. So I was thinking that maybe some of the focus on the Hilbert space and the sort of, you know, whatever happens with those state vectors and so on, maybe that should be abandoned and one should go to something more abstract. Maybe some new mathematics is needed, but that's a different question. So let's abandon everything and let's start over again. I'm in.
Regarding the first question, do we require a paradigm shift? I think many theories always claim, oh, we start very conservative, but then we come to a conclusion which leads to a paradigm shift. So I guess in IPG, we also claim we start very conservative. We have gravity, we should quantize that, and then we have a unique way, and that leads to LQG, and that, however, this is a discrete spectra. So that's a paradigm shift. So it's a bit of an interpretational view in that case, you abandon many techniques from standard quantum field theory on fixed space-time. And in fact, I think that might be necessary if you kind of really believe in diffeomorphic symmetry and background independence. Now, do we need to abandon everything? That's a good question, but personally, I feel that also quantum gravity is quite an old field. The main obstacle is not so much crazy ideas, but actually computing and testing these ideas. And so regarding, for instance, very many non-perturbative approaches, you know, they used to be many Euclidean ones, which partially were ruled out, but the Lorentzian path integral is still relatively hard to compute. And even if you do Renata's saying Monte Carlo simulations is, you know, very pioneering, CDT being a very pioneering approach, but these are universes of a certain size. 40 Planck lengths, was it?
20.
Across. So I do feel that there's much that in particular, things, even ideas, which might have been ruled out based on Euclidean quantum gravity and so on, that, well, they could still be correct if you do them from a Lorentzian point of view. And so there, I do feel that the main obstacle is not so much, new ideas, because typically they go abandoning more, and so you have to work harder to see any results, but computations. Of course, you should be always ready to abandon anything, and locality might be one of these things which you can already make quite simple arguments, which have been done even by Ann Nelson and collaborators from an EFT point of view, which also seem to apply a breakdown of EFT, where you have this funny coupling between large scales and the cosmological constant and small scales. So that might be another comment on the previous question. I'll leave it to
Renata, please.
Okay, I'm not part of the sisterhood of abandoning everything, so let me take a slightly contrarian point of view. I don't know what our current paradigm is, but of course, if it's, people's prejudices, of course, these are shifting all the time. So what I do observe, there is a shift to what I would call maybe, new simplicity, which is, let's forget about all these extra structure. I mean, Neil, in his talk, you know, made a similar argument. What is the minimal, you know, set of ingredients we can get away with in, you know, in seeing something interesting? And many people are, of course, converting to quantum field theory, quantum field theoretic methods. Of course, well, the whole EFT story is, of course, you know, a pure implementation of that. But I think this has to be done non-perturbatively, and of course, yeah, there are ways of doing this. So, but I also think we need a shift away from discussing principles to implementation. So I liked in Lisa Randall's talk yesterday, I liked a remark she made very much that was about, well, what does it mean to solve quantum gravity? It seems to be receding peaks. So, you know, whenever we've gone some steps further, well, the goal seems to be moving away from us. I think it's a good observation, and I think it has to do partly with the fact that we are not really defining clearly in concrete terms, you know, what are the goals of quantum gravity? And we have, anyway, we've already seen many people interpret this in very, very many different ways. So we have been, you know, it's like the standard opening of a seminar talk where you just have to argue why we need quantum gravity. And of course, you think, oh, we need singularity resolution, we want to understand the black hole paradox, blah, blah, blah. But it's not asking, do we have the means? So what do we imagine, number one, by which means we would get there, which we haven't already used for the last 40 years? So what do we have the tools? That is something maybe also later for the tool discussion and the math discussion. So what are these realistic goals? And what does it mean to solve them? And if we have solved those, what does it actually mean? Have we then learned something about space-time? Have we actually learned something, you know, we could usefully apply in phenomenology? And I think if you are not being more concrete about the pathways, and also in a technical point, you know, sense, yeah, again, it doesn't make our subject very attractive because it's a bit hazy of, you know, where, you know, these big problems, yeah, they have some attraction, but, you know, where can we be more concrete about what we want to do and how we want to achieve it? Mm. Focusing on the principles, you know, we've talked about, you know, of course, standard QFT package, causality, unitarity, locality. I think one should be very, very reluctant to give up any one of those for a variety of reasons, unless we absolutely have to. Number one reason is, well, you know, tapping into the Heisenberg quote, it's not very easy to recover them. And, well, why don't we stumble on this problem more often? Because people have a very loose ways of talking about, you know, loss of causality on my particular approach. Oh yeah, it leads me to think something is non-local. Well, it's not very well defined what one means by that. It's not operationally well defined. If it was, one would immediately be confronted with the fact, okay, it means this, you know, this certain observable, blah, blah, blah. This is non-local, non-causal. Well, how does causality emerge once I tune out, you know, to larger scale? So that is a very, very difficult problem. So I'm not in favor of abandoning these principles, if you can.
Okay, so I don't know if I have too much to add in all that, but you know, I think that at any rate, we might have to give up something because we have two theories which they work well in their own limit, and it could be that if we want to put them together, we might have to give up something, but I don't know really what could be a sensible thing to give up and how you recover it afterwards. Because, for instance, indeed, it's plausible that we have to give up continuum space-time and we have to go to discrete. If we know how from the discrete we go to the continuous, fine. Otherwise, it's the same thing about unitary and so on. However, about the approach altogether, because I think that before that has been also addressed as well, I think indeed that development will be made if there is a kind of collaboration between the data we get from the universe in which we live and the theories we have. Because I think it's even, you know, quite ambitious and probably even, you know, impossible to say that here we are going to wake up tomorrow with the theory of quantizing space-time. And I think that indeed the lessons we can get from what we see around us can help us to somehow tune the models or replace them. So that's where I would put more of you know, the shift in the approach that we have. But indeed, to start giving up things that we know that they work and they are there, if we know how to recover them, fine. Otherwise, it might be a kind of, you know, of loophole from which we are not able to get out.
Okay. So, thank you. You want to make any comments between you? No?
I thought I might just come back. I have very much sympathy with, you know, I think I'm being provocative in saying giving up everything, obviously. Yes. But I think it's important to have an open mind whilst being pragmatic. So I think I'm very much, you know, in agreement with Bianca that you try to follow a line of thinking and just see where it takes you. But to keep in mind that maybe some treasured sort of point of view you might need to give up. So. So I'd just like to say I'm more aligned with Bianca than perhaps my original comment appeared.
Yeah, so maybe just add to that I think it's difficult to actually approach the old problem unbiased because a lot has been said and a lot has been done and many things did not work. So I think it's very useful to at least try to like look at it with clean mind and try to see things how they are, not, you know, how people got used to thinking about them. So that being said, of course, we do have things that work and we have the reality that we want to connect to, so it's not completely unconstrained. But it's good to be aware of the fact that our thinking is biased by the many decades of the history of the approaches. So if we can shove it aside for a bit, that's refreshing.
This is the conversation at the end of the day with the wine as opposed to the coffee.
That's right. There are two types of thinking about physics, right? So
But Kasia, I would say the bias that is most obvious, I think, is just that of thinking about, you know, gravity and space-time very, very classically. Mm. And not being, I mean, radical enough, you know, although, of course, you know, we've had, loop quantum gravity, of course, was a great kind of counterweight, you know, to say, okay, we take non-perturbative structures seriously, but nevertheless, also many discussions there end up being very classical, semi-classical states, you know, let's put in a background, and there's, of course, also some background in there. So we haven't been, I say, radical enough to also say where quantum theory takes us.
Yeah, yeah.
So, because we know it, you know, from quantum field theory, right, where it takes us in a non-perturbative sense, yeah, and that it's not very intuitive, and quantum theory itself is not very intuitive, but of course applying it to space-time, that is the unusual feature, because usually in other QFEs we don't touch space-time. You know, it's just
totally
there.
Agree. Let's see if there's any question from the audience at this on this topic.
Or comments.
Kelly?
Questions. It's more just an observation that this language that Thomas Kuhn introduced about paradigms and paradigm shifts, he had in mind, of course, the historic events of the early 20th century in particular quantum mechanics. But the actual shift was forced by experiment, by observation. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just that people had gotten tired of arguing amongst themselves and finally decided to make a paradigm jump. It's because when there was a real problem in the structure of the atom. Mm-hmm. And another example, I guess, would be geology and the whole issue of the geological time, mm-hmm. which only became crystallized when radioactivity was discovered. So I get the feeling that we're in the phase now where we're still just arguing amongst ourselves about various approaches. There's the key is sort of bullet shot that crystallizes it hasn't yet happened. Maybe it comes from cosmology, I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's why I put a question there, because the question is, do we, in order to explain some of the puzzles that we have been discussing here, do we need such a paradigm shift or not?
But we have some puzzles in cosmology that we try to solve.
We have solved, you say?
No, we have not.
We have not solved. Yeah, but do you need paradigm shift? Maybe you can solve them by simple.
Excuse me?
Maybe you can solve them by simpler means or without changing the whole theory.
If you tell me how, that would be.
No, I don't know. I'm just.
So with the theories that we have, we just cannot solve them. So it's an open question. It's a legitimate open question.
Abba, I wanted to say something.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that. I mean, I agree with Kelly that, you know, experiments really drive, if there are experiments, things are driven. But we have one great example in front of us, right? Einstein. I mean, he was not driven by the fact that the perihelion shift of Mercury did not match after all these centuries. That was not his driving force. His driving force was incompatibility of special relativity with Newtonian gravity. Mm-hmm. And here we have got apparent, We have an incompatibility between standard notion of, you know, quantum mechanics and general relativity, which has space-time. And I mean, it's completely different mathematics, completely different conceptual structure in the two cases. And so, I mean, if we had an Einstein, then, you know, this problem would have been solved on the conceptual basis. I think the fact that it has been so long is just basically that we don't have Einstein. But it seems to me that paradigm shifts and new theories can appear. Even that are always pushed by experiments. And on the other hand, you know, as everybody is saying here, particularly cosmology is a very, very fertile ground for the early universe. And therefore, if you have got candidate theories, then I think we should see if, in fact, some of the puzzles that were just mentioned are actually addressed. I mean, you know, like, you know, anomalies or Hubble tension. Hubble tension, I don't think, is quantum
fundamental.
It has to do with the late stage universe. But in anomalies, and we may not need quantum gravity. But if in fact you have, it's just like I to explain the anomaly, the perihelion of Mercury, when we don't need general relativity.
No.
The post-Newtonian corrections are perfectly fine. So to the answer to Roberto's question, no, we don't need the paradigm shift and quantum gravity to answer these open questions. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, if in fact there is a paradigm shift which does answer these open questions, then, just like what happened with general relativity, it is very significant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, can I also comment?
I think we have to move on because time is ticking.
But there are interesting things one could say, right? In answer to the.
You want to say something urgent?
I really appreciate. Carrie. I think you're completely right. We are going in circles. So where should new input come from? So I think. Well, cosmological puzzles. There's, of course, there is a long food chain to the fundamental, you know, theory and very small distances, so they're a bit iffy. So you need data. So one thing I would advocate, numerical data that teach you something about the non-perturbative regime and that already corrects many, many fallacies and gives you a flavor of what it really means to go non-perturbative. So I think one should take this seriously as an input to, you know, where could this possibly go? And I just, you know, of course, advocate it. Just do, you know, lattice quantum gravity and work with these things, and then when you do that, totally you get a totally new perspective. You know, you have this shocking experience of having a functional tool, and you can ask questions, and these are different questions from those you can ask perturbatively, but they point you in a certain direction because we don't really have experimental data, and our intuition, I mean, Einstein could still work with imagining elevators and was brilliant, you know, in uncovering some principles, but we need additional help to, you know, help along our Planckian intuition. I don't think it's built into our DNA or experiences we formed since childhood.
Very good.
If I can add something on that, I think indeed we can all happily go to sleep without having quantum gravity. I mean, we can understand our universe without that, but there are some questions that we would like to answer in cosmology and we need quantum gravity. I think that we have to wait for quite some years, unfortunately, before we have really data that can test quantum gravity. In that way, I would like to support what Renata said the other day, that also numerical experiments can be helpful, keeping in mind that there are experiments and not the universe in which we live. However, they can give an insight that the day will come that with the data we'll be able to confront them, but I think these both waves have to parallel to continue beyond the just theoretical intuition and imagination about the quantum gravity approach.
Ruth, you wanted to say something? I would just remind you of that time around.
Yeah, very small
have
point.
Three more slides.
It'll segue into your next slide, okay. I suspect. Just responding on the numerical front, I mean, the only thing that concerns me slightly, I guess, is people have been doing lattice QCD for decades, yeah. and it's still not, as far as I understand, spot on or accurate. So
I think, well, I would say you're missing.
Basta.
Go to
you're missing four. You're at,
Oops. So there's been this topic recurring many times here, matter matters or matter doesn't matter, and so on. Now, let me remind you that matter can matter dynamically in the sense that it affects whatever quantum phenomena happens, including gravity. It also matters for gravity because it's useful to construct observables. Pure gravity has no local observables. From that point of view, it's a very poor theory. By insisting on working with pure gravity, we are depriving us of many observables. So if you add matter, it helps in that respect. So the question here, there are two questions. Can we learn something about for quantum gravity from the existing theories of the other interactions? And does it make sense to look for quantum theory of space-time without taking matter into account? And then I would also add these two points. When we try to construct new theory of gravity, will it be useful or necessary to start from some modified theory of gravity? For example, in cosmology, it's very useful to study scalar tensor theories, and there are many such extensions. For example, one can think of having the connection as an independent variable, which is a very natural assumption from several points of view. The reason I put it here is that an independent connection can translate into gravity with an independent connection can be rephrased as metric gravity with some matter field. So I think it falls somehow in this same ballpark. And forget about the unification because we don't have time to discuss that. So since we are going, we started that way, now we're going back, and now it's again with you.
Okay. I think that for me, we cannot forget matter when we try to have a theory of gravity. So it is, these things are coupled together. If we have to explain the universe in which we live, we need somehow to consider the interaction between matter and gravity. And therefore, I'm not very keen when people take gravity theory and they just impose the matter sector just by hand. It should somehow come from the theory. So I think that indeed, probably from strong electroweak interactions, we can learn, because that will give us a low energy limit of our, let's say, desirable quantum gravity theory against which we can test the prediction which we have. So I think that also because, you know, if at the end of the day you have a modified Einstein's equation, you can map the right or the hand. The left or the right-hand side as the modification, you call it, the matter content, or you call it gravity, so you can play with that, and people have done that. So I think this interaction has to be taken into account, and unfortunately, this has not been done very often. Now, you discuss about modified gravity. This is a kind of, again, effective ad hoc theory that I wouldn't call it theory, I would call it a model that people have played with. And that means that you have to come up with a kind of different relative, the corresponding of the GR theory, which existed at the past. It was this tensor vector scalar theories, which is the ugliest theory that I have ever seen. It was completely ad hoc in order to give at the, let's say, corresponding low energy Newtonian limit, this kind of modified Newtonian dynamics. This theory does not work. So these kind of theories can be like toy models, but I do not think that one should take them more seriously, even though there is a machinery that people do that. About the metric affine kind of theories that you said, yes, they have been studied. There you have an effective action and you are going to have some kind of extra propagating degrees of freedom. And astrophysical constraints have been put, for instance, in that case for the propagating torsion, but I don't take them very, very beyond a kind of paradigm or model that people use. So, in short, I believe, yes, the interaction should be taken into account. Yes, we can learn from the strong electroweak interactions because that will give us a limit for the theory that we have. And but all these modified gravity models are just toy models that I'm not sure that is worth spending much more time.
Yes,
forgive whoever does it.
Yes. I will interpret the first question as, can we learn, about that elusive UV theory from looking at other interactions, from the standard model? I would say in concrete terms, very little, because the theory is so different. And of course, our stumbling blocks in trying to deal with this have exactly their origin in the different symmetry structure and, field content and interpretation as a theory of space-time, which these other theories don't have. And that is what makes it difficult. So, analogies work, of course, the EFT talks we've heard also there, toy models, including what yourself, worked on, for quadratic, what I can make analogies with field theoretic toy models, but when it comes to the non-perturbative theory, I think there's very little apart from an analogy I use, look, what can we, you brought up QCD, so what tools do we have to understand the non-perturbative sector of QCD? And we have beautiful numerical tools, which are indeed old, and they can, compute spectra, and so that is very powerful, and it's a tool that enables us to get information about the theory which we couldn't do with other means. So I think that's a bit of a blueprint, but other than that, quantum gravity is really background independent, and when you go non-perturbative in the UV, well, these are just features of the theory. It's not kind of technical things, so it's built in, and that's part of the difficulty. So I think it's very limited what one can learn, and it can, of course, be misleading to work too much in analogy with the other field theories because they don't have all these issues. You have a background, and you always know what a scale is. Yeah. Does it make sense to look for gravity? Well, obviously, we have beautiful two-dimensional models of pure gravity, for example, which illustrate many points. So there doesn't seem to be any obstacle in principle to having this also in higher dimensions. This doesn't mean, of course, that one is not interested in coupling gravity, obviously. That's something one also wants to understand, right? And at what scales matter and gravity interact, and how, and whether at all, and how strongly, and which degrees of freedom dominate at the Planck scale? Yeah. Very interesting and largely unanswered questions. Modified gravity, yeah, no, I skipped that one. Is unification desirable?
No, I don't know. Skip that.
I don't know. This is like, is there one God? So I skip that too.
He doesn't consider this question.
So I think I agree with Renato on the point strong, at least for the strong interaction that one can learn a lot about the connection between perturbative and non-perturbative regime. On the other hand, gravity, from my point of view, is really special. One thing is background independence, or having really the geometry encoding the force as opposed to the other interactions, so the equivalence principle. Another, which already comes up in many arguments, is the formation of black holes. And so there's this beautiful argument, you cannot go to arbitrary small distances because you cannot observe arbitrary small distances because you would need very high energy to resolve these small distances. And if you concentrate too much high energy, you form a black hole. And so many, you can make extremely simple arguments starting from classical Poisson brackets about what are observables. based on using, for instance, scalar field as reference fields, and you find that there are some additional fields, some additional terms, which prevent to concentrate too much energy, where you would have indeed too much energy, so that you would form a black hole, and from that you can derive quite simply bounds on how much you can resolve your theory. And this comes typically only if you do have gravity. It's really the formation of black holes which is extremely special in gravity. So it's maybe more physical input than just Diffie-Morphin symmetry. Well, I guess equivalence principle is also an extremely strong argument. And so that, I don't know of any kind of similar mechanism in the strong interaction, but
That argument just tells you something happens, must happen, right?
So I agree also that of course, eventually we want to all see matter in our theories, but I do believe it makes sense to also see or make approximations where I can first neglect matter. Even asymptotic safety seems to say so, that at high energies possibly should not have too much of an influence whether I couple matter or not. It could, of course, a full unification would be extremely beautiful. However, my impression is that attempts which tried that led to the very involved structures or so many additional degrees of freedom and things that it didn't work out. So it is desirable, but it's in the space of where there's too much possibilities to construct it. And so far, I don't see a straightforward way to unification. And it might be related to that gravity is indeed quite different from the other three interactions.
Kaja, please.
Okay, so I will start with the second question. So I think physically, if we want to have a theory, we also want to have some sort of measurement scheme or an idea how to perform experiments in that theory and how to interpret them. So without matter, we really have no way of interpreting whatever that theory of pure space-time would deliver, because nobody can see it. So of course it makes sense as a mathematical exercise, and it makes sense as a toy model. This is very useful. So in quantum field theory, like, we talk a lot about the free scalar field in the vacuum, which is like the most boring theory ever, because nothing happens and nobody can see it. If, let's say, that theory of quantum space-time without matter excludes something just purely on the basis of the lack of matter, I would be slightly critical because it should be a toy model, and the toy model should capture essential features of the physical system. And if it excludes some important features of the physical system, one should be cautious. So that's about the matter. Can we learn from strong and weak interactions? I think we should definitely make sure that we do make a connection with standard quantum field theory, whatever happens in quantum gravity. I think we have a freedom to tweak things a bit. So if we need to add more matter or if we need to modify gravity, that's perfectly fine. But that should be driven by some actual need. We should be open to these options, but not necessarily jump them if we don't have to. In the spirit of throwing away everything. About unification, I feel like it's a separate problem. I mean, it's adding to this problem of quantizing gravity. I mean, it's great if it comes in, and I think that was the hope, previously, and it was a beautiful idea. But if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. Maybe it's really different, then quantum gravity is not the unification theory. I can live with it.
Thank you.
Good.
So I won't speak to the first two points because I think there's been plenty of good things said already. On modified gravity, I think it is useful to study modified gravity in its own right, basically to see what you can learn about what's possible. And I think it's necessary to study modified gravity when thinking about cosmological data sets. From the perspective of quantum gravity, I'm not so sure. And then the last question, is unification desirable? I guess it's desirable to me, but I think that, I suppose, one message I would like to get across is to our younger researchers, don't just follow what the older people think is desirable, always question. So it is, do ask yourself, is it desirable? As for whether it's possible, well, we won't know till we try. And we have been trying a very long time.
Can I add something, Roberto? Because you said that the last question was not in the list, so I didn't say
you didn't.
So let me say something.
You now want to say something on that.
Yeah.
Good?
In a sense, I would like to agree with what was said, that is it desirable? By no means necessary. So it's wishful thinking. Why not? If it's there, it's there. But there is absolutely no need to have unification. So if we don't find it, we don't find it. We shouldn't, you know.
But if it magically leads to a reduction of free parameters, we would like it.
We would like it, but there is no any fundamental reason for which it has to be there. Excuse me?
Not to be trapped by the desire.
Exactly.
It's a prejudice. One could also.
Where else quantum gravity has to be there?
There's a question from Kelly.
Yes, I just wanted to add something to the second point that, to me, it really doesn't. I feel very strongly that one needs to take into account matter when quantizing gravity because of the loops arguments. But just to give a very concrete example of that, if your quantum theory of gravity is background independent and you know presumably topology emerges dynamically as well as geometry, you know if you want your theory to be able, you want to be able to couple it to fermions. The topology of space-time, not any topology is allowed. It has to come with a spin structure. So there's manifolds that couldn't come up. And somehow your quantum theory of gravity should know about this. And it doesn't make sense to me that it could know about this without knowing that there are fermions, at least. In there. Yeah.
Good. Kenny?
So I would reformulate the top question a little bit differently, not so much what we learned about theories of the strong electric weak interactions, but what if we roll it back to about 1968, where we had Murray Gell-Mann and what he had taught us is a kind of phenomenology that was evolving, but we didn't have QCD yet. That was now we see was working with an effective theory, pions and so forth. But if we, what we should be really doing, I think, is going back and looking at our own textbooks and try to notice what's actually there in front of our noses all along, namely about the relation between the effective theory and the underlying theory. And can we see anything in gravity that is similar to that, that helps you make distinctions? In the, the relation between QCD and the effective theory, there are a couple of very specific points that now we see are absolutely crystal clear. There's a decay of pi naught into 2 gamma. We were talking about this at dinner the other night. Pi naught into 2 gamma from the anomaly, you see that it's got to be three colors, and you learn something deep about what's going on underneath the floor. Also, there's the Atuff anomaly matching condition. There's also the helicity suppressing condition in the charged pion decays. So these, now we can see, you really need a specific type of structure down below in order to match with the effective theory. So nowadays, can we have some way that distinguishes between loop quantum gravity and string theory, for example, that really crystallizes it one way or the other? Those are the sorts of questions think one should be focusing on.
Okay, thank you for these comments, and let's see if we can go to the next topic now, which is maybe we'll try to go a little faster now because we don't have so much time. This theme now is the mathematics of quantum gravity. What will be most useful for in the development of the quantum theory of space-time now, because we already know the effective field theory, we know how it works, we know the tools. But for the quantum theory of space-time, what will we need? Group theory, algebra, analysis, or something new altogether? Now, in particular, in particle physics, group theory plays a very rather special role, a big role, which is present in some approaches to quantum gravity, absent in others. So the question is, what role will symmetries play in the quantum theory of space-time? And then we can distinguish global symmetries, gauge symmetries. There are different questions here. We've heard several slightly conflicting statements. According to some point of view, there are no global symmetries in quantum gravity. Others say we do calculations and we see that there are global symmetries and conserved charges. So that's an open question, I think. And then similarly, similar question for gauge symmetries. Gauge symmetries, you can say, are not physical. They are just the way in which we decide to parameterize the theory. We accept gauge invariances in order to preserve locality. If we try to get rid of the gauge invariance and look just at the physical degrees of freedom of the system, then we have non-local things that are more difficult to deal in practice. So that's another theme. And then possibly whether quantum theory of space-time could treat space and time separately. There was a hint of this from Lee at some point. But there is also an approach to quantum gravity that is not represented here, which is Hojava-Lifshitz gravity, where time and space are actually treated differently. And it's a renormalizable theory. It seems to have many good properties. You just don't have local Lorentz invariants. So you give up something else. So I ask you to please be a little bit more concise on this, because I would like everybody to be able to speak and also to ask something of the audience. So now it's starting from you again.
That's a pity, because I have a flippant response to the last one. I think you asked very good questions. I won't speak to the first two, again, interests of time. And what I found intriguing about your final question, although you put it, framed it just there in the context of Lifshitz, is really this notion that this would mean leaving behind very much Einstein's principles of relativity. And so my flippant response to that is that I've always felt it's such a waste having such a big universe, and wouldn't it be great if we could travel faster than the speed of light, mm-hmm. make it so. Mm-hmm. And so I think that would be a wonderful concept. So I'm going to pass it on.
Thank you.
So for the last question, I totally agree with the last comment of Ruth, and my TARDIS is parked around the Institute. So if somebody wants to go to the end of the universe, I'm in. So more seriously, for the first two questions, I think I have something to say as a mathematical physicist. So I absolutely love new mathematics. So I think there has been already a lot of new mathematics coming out from quantum gravity research. I hope there is some new mathematics out there, but I wouldn't be disappointed if there isn't. And, you know, we have developed a lot of new tools in mathematics over the last few decades. So maybe even with those, we can actually make some significant progress. All these things like gauge theories, I'm sure this kind of plays into that. I have my taste in mathematics, so I like functional analysis and I like higher structures, so I hope that they are relevant, because otherwise it would be really boring for me. It's good that mathematicians are also interested in this, and there is definitely, you know, exchange of ideas going both ways. Over to Bianca.
Yeah, on the point of new mathematics, what I would like to have is better tools for Lorentzian path integrals. So if we would have a tool applying Monte Carlo simulations to Lorentzian path integrals, something like that, because Monte Carlo simulations is such an extremely strong tool in the Euclidean context. There's something related, like Monte Carlo simulations on left shift symbols, but it actually doesn't really work well. So that would be great, and basically, and I think in general that better tools for non-perturbative physics. So that might be also going beyond simulations. Well, I do personally believe that diffeomorphic symmetry, in some sense, is a fundamental symmetry of quantum gravity. And I hope that it will be. It kind of comes from this relational point of view. So to the last question, of course, eventually I could be wrong, but I do think that with diffeomorphic symmetry, I rather would preserve that than violate it and have to deal with Lorentz violations. Nevertheless, I would like to travel faster than light.
I know, right?
Getting younger, no, that's... so who would not like that? But it would lead to lots of interesting questions of getting backwards in time, traveling back to the future.
So I would definitely arrange to step into this room from the back right now if I had a time machine, would be excellent timing.
That would be all these paradoxes of me killing somebody in my...
In your family. That's also a very mean thing to do to your own family.
Okay, so let me take over. So I have a very concrete suggestion of what one is. So the new mathematics, yes, we already know what part of it is. It's a random geometry on the one hand, so that means describing basically what underlies the path integral as a coming from an ensemble of piecewise flat identical metric spaces that are built from identical building blocks essentially. So it's a whole branch of mathematics now is a 2D version of talking about random paths. So you can talk about random surfaces and you can make sense of the path integral, to use a more physics language, and you can understand that by taking a suitable continuum limit of such ensembles, what we would call kind of quantum spacetimes, you would arrive at an object that has metric properties, d6, and you can discuss its kind of quantum geometry. So, of course, and the mathematics is catching up on also doing this on 2D Lorentzian. So that would be, the mathematically rigorous formulation behind CDT, which you, of course, can analytically solve in 2D. So that same stuff applies in higher D. So from the point of view of geometry, what you're giving up is smoothness, but not continuity. So it's not you're not going fully discrete like you do in causal sets, but you still, and you have metric structure. So you're not throwing away information about distances. And that gets you a very, very, very far. And it gets you also to new territory, which is also already explored by mathematicians who, mm-hmm. there's a huge branch of mathematics of beyond Riemannian geometry. And people are looking at Ricci curvature, how to define Ricci curvature in particular, and these days also how to do this in Lorentzian. There is generalized Lorentzian that is under the heading of non-regular, beyond regular Lorentzian structures, which is also interesting from a classical point of view, but I think that's a mathematics. So it's not a huge deviation from, Einstein and Riemann, but it's a very concrete generalization.
Okay.
Let me just very brief us. So about new mathematics, that's the thing that I said right at the beginning, that I believe we need new mathematics. Now, if we have them or not, I'm not in the position to say. It's great if we have them. But we do need new rules, which probably are there, but I don't know if we use them correctly or wherever. About symmetries, I think that, yes, gauge symmetries are important. They offer something more than just, the physical description. For instance, in the framework of loop quantum gravity, we've seen that diffeomorphism and local SU2, it's something which was important to define the states. And about the last question, I think that unfortunately, probably yes, we could treat them differently.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I would have expected that you would suggest non-commutative geometry as a possible new topic.
Excuse me?
I expected you to suggest non-commutative geometry.
As that's one thing I didn't know.
Maybe,
what is
maybe
the
you
rule.
Don't consider it sufficiently new.
No, I do. It's something, as I said the other day, I've been working a bit myself and I discovered there are many new things there. If there are at the position to answer all this question, I'm not sure. So indeed, there is another. I mean, certainly, non-commutative geometry is an approach that could be, fruitful. But I don't know if we have all the tools that we need, or if we're aware that they're just next door to our colleagues. That's my concern.
Okay. Now, to the audience now. No questions on this point. No, not yet. let's see what we have. I think we have one last slide.
One last one.
You have still another question?
Yeah. So applications of quantum gravity, of course, the most important thing. There's a list of possible applications that have been touched upon here during this conference. And so the question is, which one of these do you think maybe the where the first signs of quantum gravity will appear? What kind of signal do you expect to see? When is, I don't know, that's a more difficult question. Now, the cosmological constant problem is also, is it a problem of quantum gravity? And if it is it solvable in the effective field theory, or does it need a quantum theory of space-time? And finally, looking into the glass sphere, suppose that eventually we get some experimental evidence, and what will this tell us? Will it confirm one of the established approaches ruling out others, or will it be unable to discriminate between different approaches? Or will it altogether require a completely different point of view, so radical revision, going beyond everything that we have learned so far? So,
Which of all these, because now you have 10 questions here, which one you want?
Well, it's a general theme. Yeah, you can say your opinion on any of these things,
so,
or not.
The results probably will come, I think that I believe more that some kind of phenomenology will come from cosmology, but now where exactly is very difficult to say, because for me gravitational waves go within the cosmology, so that probably might give some hint. I believe more than the universe can give us something about a test or a way to go ahead. Now some kind of some kind of modification from the waveforms that we know, from the end result of the mergers of the two compact objects, that's something as well that can give an insight of something beyond GR. So we have the generation, we have the propagation, so parity violation, all these kind of things. Now, whether we could have a kind of, to distinguish between a variant from another variant of quantum gravity, that's something very difficult, and I'm not sure, because first of all, we have to classify them, to put them in under some umbrella, and they have many common aspects, and probably they have some common implication. So I don't know what you say to say, if you now you tell me it's coming from CDT or LQG or GFT or God knows which kind of combination of letters, then I think it's very difficult to say. So, but something from a quantum gravity kind of signature, I believe that it will come and should come. Now when? I think, unfortunately, it's not next door. So still we have to wait. Now, I don't know what did you say here. You said many questions. You said about the cosmological constant of things like that, the vacuum. So I think this is a question that should be addressed within a quantum gravity kind of context, because there is a legitimate question in order to study the energy density in a vacuum state. And that's a question that the quantum gravity kind of theory should be able to give an answer. There is indeed a problem that there is a kind of divergence of the vacuum energy if you try to calculate it in the most naive quantum field theory kind of approach. So I think that there is a question that quantum gravity will have to face, not as the value of the cosmological constant, but as the vacuum energy itself. So I think, given the interest of time and other four people have to talk, I stop here.
Yeah, okay, so my preferred scenario would be, I mean, by the time experimental evidence will finally appear, okay, that gives sets some time scale. I would hope that by that time we will not be talking about approaches, but we've been talking about, you know, well, about methodology, you know, like in the rest of quantum field theory. You know, we are not talking about, oh, your approach to the standard model and my approach to the standard model. We've agreed, you know, there's a, you know, quantum field theoretic principles, there's certain data, there's a certain way of computing with it. So I think emphasis on implementation, which also includes, as also Bianca has been stressing, developing effective computational methods that tell you something about non-perturbative regime, will immensely help us to converge on something. So that's my opinion and hope. And I think that's one of our very few hopes that are there. What is our best bet in terms of phenomenology? I agree with Mary, it's cosmology. And, you know, deriving, coming up, I mean, we cannot wait. It's not that we'll be able to read off. We have to tell them, you know, what the waveforms should be. So that should come from predictions from our, by then, unified way of thinking about quantum gravity, and hopefully something that's unexpected and that is not, you know, perturbative, or it's not obvious from an EFT point of view. Maybe a different type of observables, which nevertheless could leave an imprint in things we can measure.
Let me start with the middle question. So I agree, the cosmological constant problem should be addressed in quantum gravity. But you can even start with the question, is it completely vacuum energy or is it a constant? You could also put a constant and then look what leads to a consistent theory. But it's also interesting to see how do we get down the cosmological constant, how do you get the small value. If it's solvable in EFT, I would then ask, we do have EFT, why hasn't it been solved? So I'm not doing every EFT. People can answer that. So it might require a quantum theory of space-time if indeed you want to have it act, if you want the quantum theory of space-time to act as a regulator for your quantum field theory. On all this bunch of the last questions, indeed, it's very likely that we will not be able to fully discriminate between different approaches. What I find typically difficult if I think about quantum gravity experiments is really in terms of observables and me setting and putting things at Planck scale, how should I imagine that? So in order to interpret observations, I feel we always apply a lot of our current understanding and current background there. So I would not expect a radical revision beyond what we have, beyond the current approaches, because the current approaches already explored so much possibilities. And even there, I find it sometimes difficult to kind, you know, think of what could be useful experiments, just because if I construct these observables, these are completely mathematical constructions, but what would it mean? You know, I figure out what is the value. I mean, typically we say we use meta fields as reference frames and we measure the scalar field. I mean, we cannot measure a scalar, we never measure the value of a scalar field. So, so these are just, this is for me actually also another challenge from quantum gravity.
All right, so the first guess, I think it's going to be cosmology, but okay, I mean, my guess is as good as anyone's. And if it comes to what exactly this is going to be and what's going to happen, I think we are all going to be surprised this way or the other. And I think it's great. I'm looking forward to being surprised.
Over to Ruth.
Very much agree with that statement. So nothing much to add. I'm very much in agreement with what everyone's already said about signals, quantum gravity, cosmological constant. I suppose the only thing I could add is that, you know, perhaps we also need to look beyond directly thinking about quantum gravity, but thinking about, you know, analogs, and can they tell us anything, not maybe directly about quantum gravity, but about some of the features that might appear. And so that is something else that could give us some insight.
Very good. Any other comments on this between you? Yeah. No? Yeah. You want to add something?
Yeah. I think there is a huge recalibration has to take place about our expectations of what quantum gravity will be able to solve, especially in the UV, because this, you know, if it's really what we're thinking of, it's a highly coupled theory, strongly coupled theory. What are our means, even from a technical point of view, to talk about such systems? Of course, they're all over the place in physics, and we cannot write, you know, equations in closed form for such systems. So to have very detailed analytical control in this regime, this is just, will be forever, I think, out of the question. And certain many observables, you know, what you're complaining about, you know, they just don't exist in any operationally well-defined sense in such a setting. So we shouldn't overload, you know, our expectation of what quantum gravity will be able to do. Maybe it will never solve the cosmological problem. Maybe it will never give us an explanation of whether black hole evaporation, you know, is unitary. It could do, nevertheless, to tell us something about cosmology. So these things are not excluded. And when, yeah, let's not overload, you know, it's a duty of quantum gravity to solve.
But in something that Roberto, you wrote there, the simulations and the analogs are not as powerful as cosmology, if we can really understand the data and somehow analyze them in the correct framework, which is a huge question mark. But otherwise, it will be more direct.
I'll say, since the hints from directly from nature are going to take a while, sure. I think everybody agrees. In the meantime, simulations and analog models could provide some
Every type indication. Of information is welcome.
Yeah, yeah, but
very good. Now, Abai here has a question.
Okay, just a comment. I mean, I think that there is often, and some of it was reflected in the, just now in this discussion, pessimism about these experimental confirmations. So I just wanted to share two things. One is that in 2013 and 2014, in various conferences, I met people working on gravitational waves, theoretical side, and they were saying, oh God, you know, I don't know what happens, because the event rate was so uncertain. They said, well, you know, we have worked 15 years on this, and what happens if, in fact, they don't receive the sensitivity? Well, it would have all been really wasted. And these are absolute leaders. I don't want to say the names. Absolute leaders in gravitational waves today. Right? And then in 2015, one saw the gravitational waves, and the field changed completely.
Abai, I'm sorry, I cannot
hear what you're saying.
Okay, sorry, nobody can hear.
So we're just sitting here smiling, we cannot understand.
You cannot, okay, no. So I'll just very quickly, in 2013 and 14, I met several leading people in gravitational waves, theoretical people, and they were kind of really worried that, you know, they had worked on this for last 15, 20 years, and what happens if they never see these gravitational waves, because the event rate was so very uncertain. And then in 2015, gravitational waves were found, and there was a huge progress up here. Mm-hmm. And so I think we should not be so pessimistic. I mean, it doesn't mean that we'll definitely get something. And that's the reason why in my panel discussion presentation, I focused on one example. But to me, it is a fantastic example, because the idea was that many of these quantum gravity models will predict too much non-Gaussianities. But still too much is still not observable. And so you have to dig it out of the noise. And this clever idea about that was Van Tent and Salgado and Durer, that one, they could actually not only peel it out of, you know, this, given the prediction of a theoretical model, they actually could see if there is evidence or not. And they ruled out a whole bunch of things. And so here, to me, I'm very impressed, because that is a very concrete example. And that's not a broad theory, but specific models that people had proposed about in bouncing cosmologies that were ruled out, and others remain. And so I don't think one should be as pessimistic, and we should say, well, This really is just conceptual.
One person's pessimism is another person's realism. You know.
Yeah, I agree, but I think that's why I'm giving my view, which is not your view, right? Exactly. That's exactly the reason why I feel, especially for younger people, they should be much more there's enthusiastic and optimistic about experimental confirmations.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Just a short comment. As a member of the Event Horizon Telescope, I cannot resist to mention that also with black hole shadows, we might find effects of quantum effects, or quantum effects on black holes. So as compared to gravitational waves, these objects are much larger, so the curvature would be weaker. That can be tested. But if you have a idea of maybe a black hole mimicker or something similar, then you still could be able to distinguish these effects also with the Event Horizon Telescope. And since the images have not yet played such a big role in the discussion, I simply wanted to bring them up. Thank you.
I didn't understand again well your question. You said that with the Event Horizon Telescope there is some kind of let's say hint that you have a quantum gravity signature, that's what you said?
I said that there could be some hints.
As a comment, that was your comment.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the answer to your comment is that I believe there is as well important astrophysical uncertainty, and it could be not a quantum gravity kind of hit, but some kind of astrophysical contamination, whatever model, as far as I know. So it's a plausible thing, but there is still the astrophysical uncertainty which could, you know, go against the signature of a quantum gravity thing. So.
Good, thank you very much. And so really we have to close at this point. And so let us thank our panelists for their insights.